Welcome to a new episode of Drops of Science, the multilingual scientific podcast that selects for you the latest news in natural sciences. We start today talking about plants that are able to associate with several microbes, including pathogens, non-pathogens, and beneficial microbes, also called mutualistic. Until recently, it was thought that pathogenic and mutualistic agents had very distinct characteristics, starting from the genetic side, but the work published by Dr. Iruma and collaborators from the University of Tokyo sheds new light on the question. The team analyzed the genetic information of various strains of a root fungus called Coletotrichum tofieldie that typically benefits plants including corn and tomato when they suffer from phosphorus deficiency, helping them thrive despite the lack of this vital nutrient. The researchers implanted a total of 6 strains of the Coletotrichum fungus into several specimens of a host plant, in this case the tailcress or Arabidopsis thaliana, and used comparative transcriptomic analysis to identify differences in gene expression between different strains of fungi. The results of this experiment showed that 5 strains of fungus were beneficial to the plant, while 1 inhibited nutrient absorption, growth, and increased susceptibility to disease. Not only that, at the genetic level, scientists have observed that all strains share an almost identical gene cluster called ABABOT, which exclusively determines whether the fungus presents pathogenic or mutualistic traits towards the host plant. Moreover, the research group discovered that in the beneficial strains, the ABABOT cluster is not expressed, with an advantage for the plant, while in the pathogenic strain, the cluster is active, bringing negative effects to the host plant. But that is not all. Dr. Iruma and collaborators also found that this fungal cluster can be deactivated at elevated temperatures, thus causing the pathogenic strain to transform into a beneficial one. Scientists are now wondering whether the fungi we traditionally call as pathogens can actually function as a beneficial microbes when placed in different environmental conditions, with a notable impact on plant conservation and agriculture. From Rockefeller University in New York comes exciting news regarding the relationship between vocal learners and their cognitive ability. Dr. O'Day and collaborators studied 214 individuals belonging to 23 species of North American birds and classified their vocal learning ability. This classification can be accomplished using 3 parameters: how many songs and calls are in the bird's repertoire, whether the bird can contribute to learn new songs and calls throughout its life, and whether it can imitate other species. Secondly, after leaving the birds to fast overnight, the team gave them the opportunity to complete mental tests that provided food as a reward. By piecing together parameters and test results, the researchers found out that among the 23 bird species studied, starlings, jays, and catbirds were not only the most advanced at vocal learning, but were also the best at solving problems. Added to this, the species have a very large brain compared to their body size. This is the first study to demonstrate a relationship between complex singing learning and cognitive ability, but also between these two phenomena and brain size. This work could function as a model that can be tested on other species of birds and also mammals, since only a handful of animal groups are capable of complex vocal learning. Besides humans, the group is composed by elephants, whales, seals, and bats. Let's now talk about parental care, a behavioral phenomenon and evolutionary adaptation that is essential in many animals and which has a profound impact on the development of an individual and the maintenance of a species. From York University in Toronto come the results of the research carried out by Dr. Chow and collaborators regarding the relationship between maternal care, in this case, and a small carpenter bee, Ceratina calcarata. The females of this wild bee species are solitary and tend to build one nest per year in the pith of the stems of dead plants, where they lay their eggs and take care of their offspring from spring until fall. The team of researchers studied the early stages of egg development in the presence and absence of the mother, with greater emphasis on analyzing the genetic expression of these bees. The results obtained are extraordinary, as it was discovered that the presence of the mother increases the number and size of differentially expressed genes, meaning the process by which different genes are activated in a cell with the aim of giving it a specific function. While in the absence of the mother, the transcription factors that regulate the immune response in the larvae are more enriched. Without maternal care, the pathogen load of these developing bees increased. The nest contained 85% of fungi, while 8% were bacteria, which can impact their microbiome, a critical component of bee health, so as well as of their development and their immune system, with consequences in brain and eye development, and even behavior. The most common fungus found was Aspergillus, known to induce the disease that mummifies the offspring of honeybees. These results suggest that when the mother is present, the nests are cleaner and the larvae can develop cells with different functions. In contrast, the absence of mothers during the early stages of development is associated with cells linked to the immune response. The subject of the next news is rivers, essential for the survival of many species, both aquatic and not, including humans. For life to continue in a stable manner, the temperature and quantity of dissolved oxygen in rivers must fall within specific optimal parameters. Dr. Z and collaborators reconstructed historically poor data on daily water temperature and dissolved oxygen in 580 US rivers and 216 Central European rivers, using artificial intelligence and machine learning, with temporal weather and water quality data. By doing so, they found that 87% of rivers have warmed in the last 4 decades, and 70% have lost oxygen. They also observed, through the computational models obtained, that urban rivers show much more rapid warming than agricultural rivers, although the latter show a high degree of oxygen loss. The research team wanted, with these results, to then create projections for the future, obtaining that for the rivers considered, future deoxygenation rates are between 1.6 and 2.5 times higher than historical rates, furthermore adding that within the next 70 years, some fish species could become extinct due to long periods of lack of oxygen. According to the authors, this is the first real work that takes a look at rivers on a large scale. Despite their important function, they have historically been neglected in climate change studies. From the Faculty of Biological and Environmental Sciences in Helsinki come the results related to the state of protected areas, the primary tool for mitigating the decline of the population of animal and plant species and preventing their extinction. Are protected areas really working? Dr. Santangeli, together with his collaborators, tried to answer this question by collecting occupancy data of 638 species of birds, mammals, plant, and phytoplankton between protected and unprotected sites in Finland for over 4 decades. The results obtained show contrasting effects of protected areas depending on the group of species considered. First, protected areas do not fully meet the expectations set for them. According to the researchers, in fact, the current network of areas can help slow down the decline in occupancy rates, but alone it will not be able to stop the crisis that is affecting biodiversity. Second, the effect of protected areas is influenced by their size, implying that the larger ones work better, and by the year in which the area was protected. As a third result, scientists obtained quantitative data on the species and found that 1 in 5 bird species, 1 in 8 mammal species, and 1 in 20 plant or phytoplankton species benefit from protection. These results, however, must not be interpreted as a total failure. On the contrary, it shows that the Finnish network of protected areas will allow us to gain time to counteract the loss of species. But these areas must be improved by connecting them to each other and making the landscape more complex and more suitable for a larger number of species. We close today's episode by talking about the Sahara Desert and a study published by Dr. Armstrong and collaborators. from University of Helsinki and Bristol. Much evidence shows how this area was periodically covered in vegetation, with the proliferations of animals and rivers, converting what we know as desert into a corridor used by a large amount of species to disperse out of Africa. But modeling the extent of these humid periods has been very complicated. The research team used the scientific advances in climate modeling to calculate the duration of humid periods over the past 8 million years. The results obtained show, first of all, that the North African humid periods have a cyclicity of approximately 21,000 years, and that the climatic variations from the desert stage to the green stage were mainly linked to the evolution of a particular orbital parameter, which we call precession. This astronomical phenomenon corresponds to the oscillation of the Earth's rotation axis. The direction of the axis describes a circle over a period of approximately 21,000 years, determining an evolution of seasonal insolation and therefore of climate variations. With the Earth oriented to receive maximum sunlight in summer, in North Africa the local monsoon becomes more important and the Sahara turns green. On the contrary, when the orientation of our planet's rotation axis limits the local summer solar flux, the climate becomes drier, and the Sahara becomes a desert again. This orbital parameter is therefore recognized as the main factor influencing the monsoon system in Africa. The study did not end here. In fact, the researchers also observed the existence of some jumps. Several theoretical episodes of rain, in reality, did not occur. These missed green moments occurred during glacial periods, when there were large ice sheets covering much of the high latitudes. The vast ice sheets cooled the atmosphere and suppressed the African monsoon system's expanding tendency, blocking the Sahara's greening. This new information can help us better understand the dispersal of plants and animals out of Africa throughout the Quaternary. This concludes today's episode of Drops of Science. Thanks for being with us. See you soon, and good science.